Hi, I'm Jane Lindholm. I'm the host of Vermont Edition, and I just wanted to let you know that this podcast has been edited for brevity. Thanks for listening.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Vermont switched from the NECAP tests to the Smarter Balanced Assessment tests for 2014-2015 school year. The new tests allow students to take them on a computer rather than with pencil and paper. When the first set of results were released in August of 2015, Education Secretary Rebecca Holcomb joined us and explained why the state switched to this test.
We have changed standards, and we are now working towards the Common Core standards in the state of Vermont. And these standards are more challenging. They emphasize different material. They emphasize it to a different level of rigor. And so we needed a new test that would be aligned with those specific standards. We also needed a new test because we know that there are certain challenges to the pen and paper format. And in particular, if it's the right level of difficulty, we can get a pretty good fix on what you know and what you don't know based on a paper and pencil test. However, the reality is in every grade, there are students who are really extraordinary in their mastery material, and there are students who are struggling or maybe learning English and so haven't figured out how to express it. And the challenge there is we can't really tell from these pen and paper tests what these students really do know.
That was Education Secretary Rebecca Holcomb explaining the reasons for changing from the NECAP exams to the Smarter Balanced assessments. That first year, 2014-2015, was a pilot year, allowing students to get used to this new format. And then last year's results served as a baseline. Now the 2016-2017 results are in, and they allow us to compare them to last year's assessment results. So here to do that for us today is Amy Fowler, the state's Deputy Education Secretary. It's nice to have you back on the program.
Thank you. Nice to be with you.
The headline is, we did worse than last year in almost every grade in both math and English. In fact, Vermont students scored better in only one grade, 11th, in English, in all the tests that were taken. That's not what you were hoping to see. Is it a surprise?
It certainly wasn't what we were hoping to see, and I think it was a surprise. We work with our educators. We talk with them about the fine work that they are doing. And with everything that we see, we had certainly hoped that the scores would be on an upward trajectory, and they simply weren't.
Do you have any sense of why? Why they aren't on an upward trajectory?
Yeah, that is the ongoing question, of course. And it's one of those really difficult challenges because, of course, we want to address the fact that the scores went down and honor and recognize that that is, in fact, the case. But we want to be careful about making a supposition about what the reasons might be when the data for that just isn't quite known. So usually in education, we're looking for data on a three-year trend so that we get make sure that it's actually a trend of data and not just an anomaly. Lots of folks have given us different reasons to think about what might account for things that were different last year. So one possible consideration that people have put forward is that, as you know, we're going to be talking about also the ESSA Every Student Succeeds Act passed. And as a result of that passing, all federal accountability for schools was put on hold for the year. And that might have signaled to schools that the test scores were less important in this particular year, and perhaps people weren't quite as attuned to the test scores as they led up to taking them. A second thing might be that just as in my own work, you know, the previous year I'd been more focused on our reading and math and our academic subjects, but when the ESSA plan came into needing to be written, I had to divert my attention to spend more time in thinking about what that plan would be. And I spent less time focused on, you know, remembering the things that I had done the year before. And our school systems are very similar in that they have demands each and every year. So in any given school system, they might have turned their focus to implementing universal pre-K during that year, or perhaps they were looking at some kind of governance change, or perhaps they had a new professional development agenda. We can't really know, but what we can say is statewide, our scores did go down in each of those areas except for the 11th grade, and that's certainly not the direction that any of us would like to see it go.
But those reasons, you know, that something might have been different, you know, would seem to be reasonable to think of in an individual school. or an individual grade. But, you know, for example, universal pre-K, implementing that isn't necessarily going to affect the third grade English teacher in every single school. And not every school saw their scores go down. But when we take it as a statewide average, it would suggest that something is happening over the whole state. So, and it would seem to suggest that something's happening in the classrooms, not just with administrators or the agency of education pulling its focus elsewhere.
Yeah, so I think that's one of the really interesting things about how schools grow and improve together. So frequently what we see is a school is set a specific agenda on an item related to how they're going to improve or work on an effort. So they might, for example, select a new reading program that they're going to implement and use, and they're really focused on that. And so you'll see a bump in their reading scores for that particular year, and it'll be across multiple grade levels. At the same time, universal pre-K is something that we implemented that affects all of our elementary schools, and it affects all of our central offices. And again, while that wouldn't explain every single experience, whenever our attention is pulled from a core issue, we might be focused on something else. Again, it might also be something related to just the fact that people across the entire state, across the entire nation, were aware that federal accountability wasn't in place as well. We don't actually know the one reason or the two reasons. The simple fact is we all need to be paying really, really close attention to improving our scores in reading, language arts, and in math, because these are the core skills that open up so many doors for our students as they move forward.
We got a note from John who says, I recently graduated school and I have family still in the Vermont school system. Most of the kids do not care about standardized testing. They don't try on it. I know many high school students who will take it as a joke and give joke answers or choose random answers for the multiple choice. Amy Fowler, do you see that bearing out?
Yeah, this is a really interesting question that comes up along stories that students tell about how they engage with the test. There's always a bit of this narrative, especially at the upper grades of high school. But there have been some studies done that have actually shown that kids, while they might speak about doing that kind of thing, they actually have a harder time once they sit down to take the test and actually just not engaging in the test. Having said that, that universal condition that's described, it's true nationwide. Kids talk about whether or not they're trying at that test. And so at the end of the day, the comparisons that you might make between schools and between states, when you're talking about those scores, that same condition exists everywhere. And at the end of the day, I think we can all agree that having a third of our students showing proficiency in the math scores in 11th grade and roughly 55% or so in the English language arts, that's not what we hope for our students. We want a much higher level of performance. Having said that, we did hear that story quite a bit, and we did make a move in our ESSA plan to move the assessment from 11th grade to 9th grade, primarily to use it as a diagnostic. And then to use 11th grade scores, we'll be looking for the exiting test as something that is more tied to the student's personal learning plan that would allow them to demonstrate career and college readiness in the assessment that they have chosen. So we did hear that, and that's part of the reason our ESSA plan is different.
Before we move on, can we just put these scores in context? I know I've said they're lower than last year, but overall, how much lower than last year?
So they're, and I really appreciate you asking that. So one of the things that's always really hard for the state of Vermont is we always want to be better than we were last year, but even where we are, we're performing fairly well compared to a couple other places that we might look. But in this year's test data, and I'm just going to look at a couple of different grades, our third grade students in English language arts were performing at roughly 50% proficiency and a score of 24-25, which was about 13 points lower than last year. We're in really close proximity to last year. It's just that it's like the difference between going from an A to an A minus. It really is not the direction we want to go in, but we didn't have a calamitous decline.
You also said we can make comparisons to other places, other states. Mm-hmm. So put our scores in context with the nation.
Yeah, so we've looked at some of the other press releases that have come from other states. They're not all released at the same time. And we're performing at about the same level relative to the other states that we did last year. We tend to perform in the top, you know, 10% of the states that participate in the Smarter Balanced. We also have really different demographics. But we have seen that a number of our other neighboring states have also had declines that take the Smarter Balanced. So we're still in the process of gathering that data data because all states haven't released.
You know, you mentioned that the difference from last year to this year is could be seen as like, you know, an A to an A minus or a B mm-hmm. to a B minus. But when you look at the numbers, it's more like an F to an FFFFF. I mean, you know, like 50% proficiency in any test in any school, unless you're grading on a really steep curve, is a failure. And we are, you know, we are not in any of our grades at a level where if you were scoring a test, you would call this passing. I mean, even in language arts, in English, in grade 11, which has the highest score of anything on these assessments, it's 59%. That's less than 60% who are scoring proficient, which I know the tests are ambitious, but that's like competency, right?
So I think it's a little bit of a challenging question to answer, but I will do my best. That it isn't the same way that you think of the way you would have assigned scores back, you know, when I was in school and you thought of an A as being a 90% to 100%, and, you know, anything underneath a 60% would have been considered a fail. We don't translate the grades into the percentage of students proficient. But with your analogy, that is the conclusion that you would draw. These standards are set pretty high for the students to be proficient. But the other dilemma with that is it's a simple cut score. It's do you pass or do you not pass when we talk about rates of proficiency. Mm-hmm. The agency actually prefers to look at the scale score because the scale score gives a better indication of where kids are in progressing across that continuum. So if, for example, and I'm going to use even numbers to make it easy, if the score for proficiency was a 2,500 and a student scored a 2,499, they're really only one point away from being proficient. They're not that different than the student who scored a 2,501, mm-hmm. but they get zero credit because they didn't cross over the line. So the percent proficiency, the reason that one's a challenge is that schools are not being recognized for kids getting closer to the proficiency mark, mm-hmm. where the scale score allows for us to show how schools improve over time. Now, having said that, our scale score didn't increase as an average at the state level. We do see a number of schools that actually had a decline in the percent proficient but had an increase in the scale score. And what that means is that more students became had higher scores on their assessments, but they didn't cross over that line. So it's really a measurement question that's particularly technical and probably not that interesting to everyone who doesn't spend time with test data the way I do. But really, it's this question of how do we want to recognize our schools, and what we want to emphasize to all of our schools, our teachers, and our students is that each and every day we want our children to be getting better at reading, writing, and math, and that just means moving closer to that proficiency. It's more important that you grow than that you cross a line.
I really appreciate that, and I appreciate that distinction between the idea of a pass-fail, proficient, not proficient, or a scale score, and just to sort of emphasize that. So, you know, if you're talking about a proficiency score is 2,500 and somebody is just under that, it's not that they're at zero, you know, they may be just under. Nonetheless, I mean, maybe it's a misinterpretation of what we mean by proficiency, but it seems like a test for proficiency should be testing, are our students learning what we expect them to learn, and are they capable in English and math and, starting very soon, science? And it looks like the answer is no, that half our students are not doing the sort of the basic expectation of what we expect our schools to do for them. Is that the wrong interpretation?
I'd say it's really close to right, if I could offer a little amendment, and that would be that right now about half of our students are doing the pass-fail of proficiency, and we expect better than that. But quite frankly, it doesn't mean that their kids who are not yet proficient have zero proficiency.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're not at zero, but they're
right. They haven't crossed the mark.
Yeah. I'm Jane Lindholm. This is Vermont Edition, and today we're talking with Deputy Education Secretary Amy Fowler about the just-released results of the Vermont students on our new standardized tests. We got a note from John who says, I have to say I'm not a fan of the Common Core math taught in schools now, or at least not in favor of the complete abandonment of the old standards in favor of the new. I can see some value in Common Core, but it has a lot of weak areas, I think. Seems like some combination of the two is in order. I give my son the old school at home, so at least he gets both. All parents with the time and ability might want to consider doing the same. Amy Fowler, what do you think?
Well, so the Common Core standards were adopted by the Board of Education, and they guide the general principles for how kids will learn both English language arts and math. And then the teachers create the curriculum using the guidance that they have from their central offices, often a curriculum coordinator or a curriculum director. And I think sometimes what's often conflated is the difference between the Common Core standards and then the way in which something might be enacted in a classroom or the types of lessons or experiences that a student might have. So, for example, I recently had a call from a constituent that was complaining about a book that their child was reading as being part of the Common Core, when in fact the Common Core doesn't ever assign a novel or pick a particular text. That was a decision made at the local level. So sometimes I think there's a little bit of conflation. But I do think that
There is that new math, right? I mean, the way that to people like me, it looks very confusing the way
it's
been cut.
Yeah, so I think that there's something to that. You know, I'm older than most people think I am. But when I took school, we learned by algorithm. And, you know, you were told to follow certain steps and you could get to the answer. And that if you really worked at memorizing those steps, you could replicate that with pretty good fidelity. But frequently, you didn't understand the reason why you were doing things or the thinking behind it. So much of what people talk about when they're speaking about the Common Core math is really working with kids to understand the number sense that supports the reasoning that they're engaging in those algorithms, the algorithms becoming the, shortcuts to doing that math. I do think that when parents have questions or concerns about whether or not their students are receiving the mathematics instruction they need or the English language arts instruction they need, of course they want to work with their teacher and they want to work with their principal at their local school and talk about where they see gaps and what their students need. But again, coming back to the Common Core is really about defining those standards, the expectations for learning, and then many of the ways in which we enact that curriculum in our classrooms and our local supervisory unions and districts, that's really much more of a local determination.
We got a note from Michael who says, I never took these tests seriously. Random answers were the norm for me and a lot of my peers. Granted, this was back in the late 80s, early 90s, but I doubt the attitude has changed much among high school age groups. I'm going to admit here, Amy Fowler, that's sort of mind-boggling to me. It's just not the way I thought of things as a student. I had a very competitive spirit, but but is part of it because these assessments aren't what colleges are looking at? You know, these aren't the SATs. These aren't the ACTs. This is not what is going to determine what happens to you as an individual student. It's more for school assessments and for, you know, the state and the federal government. You know, is that maybe why students think, well, it doesn't matter to me how I do on this test?
So it could. I think the question is always, what do we use the assessments for? And there are some folks who will tell me, you know, unless we have some high stakes associated with the test for kids, then we can't trust the data because some kids don't try. And the problem with that, of course, is any high stakes associated with a single measure like a test could really backfire and have unintended consequences. But if we do take a step back and we say, okay, so let's assume that kids across the state, high school students in particular, aren't applying themselves on these tests in the way we'd want them to. Well, we can assume that that behavior is relatively consistent across the state. And so that might explain part of the reason why our 11th grade scores aren't as high as we'd like. But it doesn't explain that last year's class, for example, was any more prone to that behavior than the class before. So we can hear that. We can say, okay, that's something for us to think about. Let's not decide that the results of this test determine our entire thinking about a school system. But we can use this information to help us gauge where we are and where we aren't serving students well.
Let's go to Linda, who's calling in from Rutland. Hi, Linda. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm calling because I have a daughter who's in 10th grade. And it's been an extremely frustrating experience that this is her second year of experimenting with proficiency-based grading. The test scores are not showing that all of this approach is working. They're showing the opposite. And it's just really difficult to actually know how your child is doing. Parents and students, it seems, shouldn't need to take a course in order to learn how their daughters or sons are being graded. And it's just very difficult. And I'm wondering, how are colleges actually come to evaluate this? And it seems to be inconsistent how they're doing it from school to school or even year to year. And it's very frustrating to find that two of my daughter's 4 years in high school so far are experimenting on how to grade her.
Linda, thanks for the call, and I hear the frustration in your voice. Amy Fowler, how would you respond? And my understanding, this isn't experimentation anymore. This is implementation, right?
So Linda, thank you so much for calling. I think the question that Linda is actually speaking to is related to the education quality standards and the implementation of Act 77 from the legislature related to proficiency-based learning. Did I have that right, Linda?
She did.
Okay. So these two things are intersecting at the same time that we have our state assessments as well as our ESSA plan. So the legislature passed Act 77, which spoke to the importance of having flexible pathways to graduation and also the ability for students to earn credit for the learning that they have that occurs outside of a school setting or in a non-traditional way to count towards their graduation. And then the education quality standards are rules adopted by our State Board of Education that reinforced that commitment of Act 77 and also said that school systems needed to move to having a proficiency-based graduation standard, which would be tied to students demonstrating proficiency in the grade level competencies that they had during the time that they were in high school, rather than simply earning what was commonly referred to as the Carnegie credit, meaning if you took a course and got a certain grade, you got a certain number of credits. And Linda, would you speak about the inconsistencies or differences from school to school? That's absolutely a part of our Vermont landscape, our local control and the determination that graduation requirements will be set by the local board leads to some differences between school systems and how they implement these policies. And the agency of education's responsibility is to provide support through professional development offerings to school systems to say, hey, how can we help you think about the way in which you're going to do that? Having said that, we're also really concerned when students are moving from one school system to another. A student who moves in their sophomore year to another setting, we want them to be able to continue on their pathway to graduation. And just because they're in a new system, they shouldn't be starting over. But I do know the question that you're raising about proficiency-based grading, I think, is the other component that goes along with this. In the traditional system, people are really used to getting letter grades, you know, an A, B, C, D, or fail. You know what that means, and you understand how colleges put those together in order to create a transcript and a GPA that helps kids understand the way in which a college will interact with them. We've worked with a number of college partners. We've partnered with some national organizations that are pursuing proficiency-based learning to look at what does this impact mean for kids who are going off to college that might have a proficiency-based graduation requirement or a proficiency-based transcript. And what the colleges have told us is that they are very well prepared to receive students with all different kinds of reports. They've been accepting students who are homeschooled, that go to international schools, that go to schools that have narrative transcripts, that have traditional transcripts. The colleges have ways of making sense of those reporting structures, and this was not their concern. Now, that's different than it being a concern for families. And again, it sounds like you've done exactly the right thing by going to your school and asking questions and saying, I don't understand how I'm supposed to track my child's progress. This is the information I need, and interacting with them around that very question.
A quick question from Eliza in Tunbridge, who wants to know if there's a place where the public can take the Smarter Balance test or an example test to develop a deeper understanding of what the test results reflect.
Well, I do know that we've had places online where people can go and take sample items. And I don't know the exact location on our website, but what I will do is I will ask our point of information officer if she can gather some of those resources and put them up on our website at the Agency of Education, probably in the next few days, so that anybody who wants to access those assessments could have an opportunity to try out those problems.
We got a note from Jeff who says, I can't believe more parents aren't angry and astounded with these scores. We have set the bar so low for these students, it's now a race to the bottom. And we got a note from Kristen Gessman, an education professor at St. Michael's College, who says, well, I'm interested in hearing what Deputy Secretary Fowler and her team will be doing to support the teachers and their efforts to help more students become proficient. I'm also interested in the role teacher education programs may play now in the future. So I guess that is the next step, Amy Fowler, is okay, what next? What do we do to improve?
Yeah, I think that's a really important question because it's nobody likes to be in the position to talk about the bad news. We want to talk about the good news. So how are we going to help all of our students to increase their mastery? And I think one of the very first things that we are doing right now is we're continuing our analysis because we do have evidence in the state of Vermont that over the last 2 years, there have been places where there's been improvement over time. And we want to go look and see what is it specifically that's happening in those environments that can translate and can be moved to scale in other locations. But I think one of the other things that was brought up, and I didn't catch the name of the professor, but that she brought up was how are we going to close these gaps? And I think there's often a narrative that says that students with particular characteristics are more likely to have lower scores than other students. And while that's true at the state level on average, we have plenty of evidence that there are schools that are outperforming for students with high needs. So we have some schools where the students on free and reduced lunch are outperforming students who are not on free and reduced lunch at other schools. And there are magical things happening in those environments. And by visiting and dissecting what is exactly the structures in place, we can bring those to scale to help other folks know how to implement them.
How long does that take, though? Because, you know, I feel like we had that same conversation with Secretary Holcomb 2 years ago.
Yep. And so one of the things that happens is it's important to make sure you don't have a false positive. So we look for evidence of a pattern that's occurring in more than just 1 year. And now we have 3 years of data where we can look and say, yeah, this is actually indicative that there is a system that is working here that's worth bringing forward. And it wasn't just an anomaly of a particular year or 2 years. But I think the other component that's really a struggle with this is that we really need to believe that kids, all kids, can get better at doing this work and that every scale score increase is a valuable scale score increase and it's not just about crossing that line. But we do work on professional development. At the Agency of Education, we tend to work more with the supervisory union and curriculum coordinator staff than directly with the teachers. That's something that the principals and the superintendents are doing, but we do provide a number of resources around how to do that work. So there is some professional development.
So just before we let you go, I want to ask you very quickly, you've mentioned ESSA a couple of times, and that's the Every Student Succeeds Act. That's the federal government's education plan. And Vermont had to submit an education plan for federal approval, which it did in April. The federal government came back and said, we'd like you to make some changes, some revisions. Mm-hmm. You've resubmitted. Looks like it's a go. So what does that entail, just broadly speaking?
Yeah. So the state's ESSA plan is the review of the previous No Child Left Behind. We've written it to be in alignment with Vermont's education quality standards and our education quality review so that will be as streamlined as possible. But it basically details to the federal government what the agency will do to support schools as they move to improve performance in the academic achievement area.
Are we likely to see either a threat to federal funding or an increase in federal funding based on the results of these assessment tests that we've been talking about?
No.
So it doesn't matter in terms of federal funding what our achievement tests say.
Unfortunately or fortunately, depending on your perspective, this year was the year that did not count as the transition was moving.
So next year, if our scores are lower again, what happens?
They'll be asking us what we're doing to improve it. So we're going to work real hard to make sure they don't ask that question next year.
Amy Fowler is the Deputy Secretary of the Agency of Education. Thanks very much for talking with us today.
Thank you very much as well.